Okay, I'd like to welcome all of you here tonight. Thank you again to Rabbi Hartstock for always agreeing and giving us of his Torah. Next 2 weeks we're taking off, and then we're going to resume. Without further ado, Rabbi Hartstock.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Friedman. Thank you, all of you, for coming. So I was reading Parshas B'Shalach and realized kind of the parsha that was in my starting point is actually the Mishnah that is of always kind of been fascinated by from when I was a little kid at the end of the third parak of Rosh Hashanah that focuses on turns our attention towards the end of this week's parsha, which is the battle with Amalek. And just because that's where my interest started, I guess I'll go out of order on the sheet and just start at the bottom to read that Mishnah. The last lines on the first side says, this is Perek Gimel, Mishnah Vav Le, or Mishnah Chet, depending on how you count it. It quotes in that Mishnah, Rosh Hashanah, V'haya kasher yarim Moshe yado b'gavar Yisrael, that when Moshe would raise his hands, Bnei Yisrael won the battle in Amalek. That is a reference to the last Aliyah, which describes that battle. And it was all dependent on Moshe's hands. When they went up, they won the battle, and when Moshe's hands got tired and dropped down, they lost the battle. Which the Mishnah famously asks, "V'chi yadav shel Moshe osos melchama o yadav shel ros melchama?" Is winning and losing a battle dependent on the hands of Moshe Rabbeinu? How could that possibly be? Ela kol zman she'ayu Yisrael mistaklin klapei malon. That when Am Yisrael would turn their heads heavenward and be mechavei and turn their attention to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they would win. They would win that battle. And if not, they would lose the battle. So the Mishnah is obviously, I mean, there are two things that are puzzling. One has to do with Maseches Rosh Hashanah, which is, it's just kind of striking that if you have like a sense of Rosh Hashanah, so Rosh Hashanah, the first part of the Maseches talks about Rosh Hashanah and Kiddush Achil, like things like, the Arba Rosh Hashanim Haim, and then it moves on to Rosh Hashanah itself, and then this parak is talking about all the laws of Shofar, and the end of the parak, it has this Mishnah, which is not in any context of anything that's going on, and so it's a nice prayerful kind of idea, but why is it actually located here, which is striking? And then the people who are the mefarshei, the pasuk, people who are actually paying attention to the Tanakh side of it, read this chazal, basically, and say, it's kind of a nice idea, but it doesn't really fit the story, because the story actually says that it's about Moshe's hand. The hands are at the center of the story. It's very clear when you read the story that the hands are at the center. And you read the Mishnah, and it says it's actually the hearts of Bnei Yisrael there at the center. So it's like kind of a displacement, meaning it's like if you read the Mishnah, we get the idea, but if you read the Psukim, it doesn't actually work to explain, this Mishnah doesn't work to explain the Psukim. And so people were troubled, I guess, on two fronts. Why is it there? And how does it really explain the Pasuk? So I guess what I'd like to do is actually, we're really learning Parsha Shavua, so I want to pay attention to these Psukim, but do it via this Mishnah and then come back around to the end to get a sense of kind of the journey of the interpretation of the story and how it lands in this Mishnah. So that being said, I'll turn to the Psukim there at the top. So the Parsha, the last 9 psukim of the parsha, the battle with Amalek. Of course, this is the Kriyas HaTorah of Purim, and it's the shortest Kriya that we read. It's only 9 psukim. And being 9 psukim, it actually divides very neatly into 3 groups of 3, which is how we read the Aliyot, and that's how I broke it up here. And the story actually works that way also. So we're going to kind of read it through, with our goal being to understand what's this all about, the way that it's told, aside from... not aside from, but it's obviously describing winning that battle. But there's a lot, there's stuff that's going on here. It starts with, Vayavo Amalek Vayilachim Yisrael Birfidim. Vayomer Moshe Yoshua Bechar Lanu Anashim Vetzehi Lachem Ba'amalek. Machar Anochi Nitzav Al Rosh HaGiva Umateha Elokim Biadi. So Moshe says to Yoshua, I should pick men to go out to battle. And tomorrow, that's when the battle is going to take place. And I'm going to go to the top of the hill with the Mateh in my hand. Vayas Yoshua kasher amar lo Moshe li lachem ba'amalek. Yoshua did what Moshe told him. U'Moshe Aharon v'chur alu rosh ha'givah. So Moshe goes up to the mountain with Aharon and Chur at his side. And this is kind of the preparation for the battle. That's the first 3 psukim. And the next 3 psukim describe... Sure.
Why is the first
pasuk
say that? I don't understand. It says that they went and they started. It seems like
That it's already under, yeah. So I'll peep. Right, that's a good parshanut-ish kind of question, which you have to. There are kind of different ways that you can go, but most simply, there's like an act when you have an act. You can have an act of aggression without the battle already taking place. You know, like, I don't know, closing the Straits of Tehran is considered an act of war based on just war theory, even though it's not. So I don't know exactly the answer. It definitely has something to do with, we're not in battle yet, but the act of aggression has begun. Yeah. But that's a good, important, good point. But yeah, so now, the next few psukim describe the battle itself, or at least the events that take place around it. So that's how the battle was going. But why couldn't Moshe keep his hands up all the time? So Moshe's hands were heavy. It was hard for Moshe, he was getting tired, so they brought a rock and he sat down. And Aaron Achur supported his hands, mize echad, one on each side, which I think strikes us as an odd phrase on its own, but his hands, his arms were faithful until the end of the day. And then down at the bottom, the battle's being waged, and Yoshua prevails, and Am Yisrael win. And again, you see, that's the end of the battle. So it's like three psukim of preparation, three psukim of the battle, and then three psukim of ideology, messaging, and stuff like that. You should write this down, and you should tell it to Yoshua for future. You should know it. This is an eternal battle. There's a lot to talk about. I'm actually just focusing on one aspect of this thing, which is, what's the military strategy and what's with the hands? Like, what's going on? So the Ramban is immediately troubled by, I mean, what he's focused on is the beginning strategy. Moshe comes and he says, "Bechar lanu anashim etzehi lachem ba'amalek," and I'm going to go up to the top of the mountain. So the Ramban's basically asking, what is that? What are those two aspects of the battle? So the Ramban describes as follows, the next source. He says, "V'ata'am shetziva Moshe et Yoshua lilachem ba'amalek." The reason why Moshe told Yoshua to go to battle, meaning in that kind of way, "Ba'avur she'yit palel hu b'nesiyut kapayim al rosh hagiva." So what does that mean? He's sending Yeshua to battle on the bottom, and then he's going to go on the top. What's Moshe doing on the top? The way the Ramban says it is, he will look down and be some enayim on them litova, so that good things will happen. And they will see him praying above, towards the heavens, umar bebit vila v'yiftechubo v'yosifu ometz u'gvura. So they're going to fight on the bottom. Moshe is going to be praying on the top. Moshe is going to be keeping an eye on them. They're going to be looking up to Moshe. That's going to cause them to pray. And so some combination of prayer and war is actually what's going to allow them to come out victorious. And then he quotes the Pirkei Rabbi Elazar. It says, "Kol Yisrael yatzu chutz aleim." It's kind of a dramatic scene. It says that the way this happened is the Jewish people were outside their tents, presumably some people are in battle, and Moshe is on top, and everyone else is in the camp. And the people in the camp see Moshe up there, and they're all, it's like you can imagine, right, this is a crisis. So when there's a crisis, some people are in battle, and some people are saying Tehillim. So Moshe is up there, and he's kind of bringing these two sides together. Kol Yisrael yatzu chutz aleim ve'ru et Moshe korea al birkav. V'hem korim al birkeim. Moshe would bow, they would bow. Notel panav arza, he would turn his face down, kind of feel at apayim. V'hem noflim al pleim arza. Poreis et yadav l'shamayim. He'd raise his hands up to the heavens. V'hem porsim et yadehem l'shamayim. Kishem sheshliach tzibur mitpalel kach kol ha'am oni macharav. It's kind of this image of Moshe, what he was doing up there was, he was the Shliach Tzibur. And so, he was the Shliach Tzibur for Am Yisrael. It's almost like there's this bringing together of the people who are fighting, and the people who are praying, and Moshe is on top, watching the people are fighting and helping them gain strength, and also leading the people who are praying, because that's how Jews go to war. And that is, and that's how they actually won the battle. Okay, that's a nice idea. And so Moshe, those two things kind of go together. Then the Rabban says something which draws reaction. Like, it caused lots of contemporary people to start to pay attention, because you read the pasuk, you don't pay attention to it. He says, "V'im kein, yeh ta'am umatei ha'elokim biyadi lomar." Now here he, this is how the Ramban raises a, now you might pay attention to this phrase and say, well, what's that doing there, Ramban saying? Says, so far we've explained the whole thing, we actually didn't explain one part of the story that's important, which is, Moshe says, V'chala no Hashim go out to war, what about me? I'm going to be nitzav al rosh ha-givah u'matei ha-elokim biyadi. Well, actually, it doesn't say anything about, I mean, this whole Pirkei Rabbi Elezer doesn't appear. There's nothing about prayers and things like that. It's just Moshe's going to be on the top, and I'm going to be on the top with a mateh. So, what's the mateh for? So Ramban, basically, when the Ramban says this, imken yatam u'mateh ha-elokim biyadi lomar, what he means, I mean, that's an implicit question. The question that he is implicitly raising, he's about to answer, is why is Moshe, that was his strategy, you go down to fight, I'll be on the top with the mateh. Well, what's the mateh for? Over the past bunch of parshiot, the mateh has a very important role. Actually, if you pay attention to the words, Hashem keeps on telling Moshe, niteyat yadcha kacheta mateh. The mateh is actually a miraculous thing. Lots of things happen. You take the mateh and you touch and you throw and you move and crazy things occur.
It says explicitly what the mateh did. Here it doesn't.
Exactly, right. That's what got people going. But meaning, on the one hand, Moshe has the mateh. Well, you're that's two steps from where we're going to be. Like, first you have to say, meaning, that's part of the problem. Why is Moshe going up there with the mateh? Actually, he doesn't do anything with the mateh. And so he says, "Imken yatau mateh elokim biyadi." Well, look how, look, me. Well, what's that? Does the problem make sense? You know what the issue is? Why is that? What's the mateh there for? So the Ramban goes with what's familiar. He kind of says, "Lomar ki kasher Allah al rosh hagiva v'ra'at amalek nata yado b'mateh lehavi alehen makot dever v'cherev v'abdan." Why does he bring the mateh? What's the strategy?
Vehicle of injury.
To do what the mateh does. Meaning, your point is well taken. That's actually what the contemporary readers will pounce on the Ramban for. But what the Ramban did, I mean, if you kind of go through the thing, it's like we tell the story, and it's like, okay, great. There's like these two strategies and all that. And Ramban kind of tells it over. What's happening? There's like a top strategy and a bottom strategy, and they work together, and that's why these things, that's what Moshe's plan was. But then at the end, he knows, like, okay, what was mateh about? And so he says what the mateh is about is what mateh is always about. So there are a bunch...
That makes sense, because, at least to me, because if it wasn't for that, then why would... This was a successful template for battle. Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Why in the Bible do we not see, after that, every battle should have had the reigning double at the door, should have gone up?
Yeah, great.
And
so that's where everybody else. So there.
But he did it then. Clearly, that it was still, you know, ETS trying the mateh. Not future local leaders didn't have that power. Only his mateh had that power.
Well, that his mateh did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. The only problem is, and here I'm gonna. There's kind of a bunch of number of different people in contemporary Israel kind of wrote along similar lines, different things, similar lines. Mordechai Sabato has an essay, Rav Rimon has an essay on this, and they're all kind of pointing to the same thing. First of all, you look at the story, Ramban, I mean, if you actually read the Psukim, the Ramban, it doesn't work. What happened? Where's the mateh? How many times does it appear here? Meaning Moshe says in the second Pasuk, mateh elokim biyadi. Then what happens?
It's gone.
And then the Ramban says, well, it's here for that reason, okay, but actually whenever it was used that way, we're not shy about describing that. Actually, the last two parsha were full of that. Three parsha were full of that. But now it's not there anymore. So they say, well, now they say, okay, well, that's one problem. Meaning, yeah, it is, the Ramban explains, and then Mordechai Sabato says, I think Ramban's wrong. For two reasons. The first reason is just what's glaring. If it's the Matev, that's what it's about, then where to go? Then he says, if that's actually, now come think of it, once that's true, this is actually different from all the other stories too. Whenever the Matev was used, how is that set up? Who sets that up? Hashem tells Moshe, this is what you should do. Take the Matev and do this. And that's what happens. And then he pays attention to the beginning of the Pasuk. Actually, how does this battle, how do they go to battle? Then what happens? There's no like tzivui here. So you're saying like, okay, this story is actually different than the previous stories. Hashem didn't tell Moshe. Moshe took the Matev but then didn't use it. So actually, what's really going on in the story? So Sabato basically says like this. He does like this kind of literary read. It's actually really cool. He says, you know what the Matev actually, you know what this story is about? I mean, again, it's obviously about Bnei Yisrael and Amalek. But the subtext of what's going on here is, it actually is about the disappearance of the Mateh. This is about moving away from magic and becoming something different. And then he says, I can actually show it to you literarily in terms of what the story is about. He says like this. He goes, I started to highlight, and then I realized I stopped in the middle highlighting. But actually, just from the, bolding. If you look at the story, you can see what's bolded there. Moshe and Amalek. How many times does it appear? If you just go to the first, if you look at the first one, you see at the top, we're looking at the same thing. So he says, the story's actually very, it starts off in a certain kind of way, but it goes in a different direction. And then the message of the story is actually hidden in the way that the parsha is arranged. So you looked at there's Amalek, Moshe, Amalek, Moshe, Amalek, Moshe. Moshe Amalek, Moshe Amalek, Moshe Amalek, Moshe Amalek. How many times does it say Moshe in this parsha? I mean, in this unit? You're three in the first one. There are two in the second one. There are two in the third one. There's seven. Yeah. How many times is there Amalek here? Same thing. Three in the first one. Two in the second one. And two in the third one, seven. So it says Amalek three times, and it says Moshe three times, and then he notes, I think this is like a good read. You know what else? I forgot to highlight, says three times. Meaning, when you read literarily Tanakh, keywords matter. Keywords are the words that are repeated over and over again. So the third keyword that's repeated seven times here is, anyone? What's that? Yeshua. I didn't count that one, actually. Did you count that? Is that seven? Something on the word Yad. Seven times. So where do you find that? Let's kind of go through that. Did I skip one? Yeah. Are you with me? Are we doing okay? Matei Elokim biyadi. One in the first unit. Second part, what does it say? Vaya kasher yarim Moshe yado, number two, v'gavar Yisrael, v'chasher yaniach yado, number three, v'gavar Amalek, v'idei Moshe, four, kvedim, v'ikhu evan v'yasimu tachtav, v'yeshe v'aleha v'aron uchur tamchu b'yadav, five, v'hi yadav emunah bo Hashemesh, six. Then, v'yom Hashem Moshe, k'tov zotzi k'on b'sev v'sim bo z'nei Yerushu, ki machu v'mchad zechrem tachat Hashemayim, that's pretty cool, I think. It actually has the word, seven times it has the word Amalek, seven times it has the word Moshe, and seven times it has the word Yad. So Sabato says that's what the story is about. It's a battle of Moshe and Amalek and the Adayim Shel Moshe actually making all that happen. And then he says, what's actually kind of encrypted in this whole thing is, Moshe starts off the story in this class, Hashem doesn't tell him to do this. Moshe starts off the story with what he's used to. And so the story is telling over in its literary kind of hidden way is, Moshe is doing what he's used to, but we're now shifting away from that. The Mateh, and this is how, what's his name, Rav Bazak, as a short piece, basically, where he basically, you know, points to the same thing. He calls this story the disappearance of the Mateh. It's like when Bnei Yisrael are weaned off the Mateh. What does the Mateh represent? Kind of magical forces. It's like, that's what you think about, these blatant miraculous forces that took, where Hashem took Bnei Yisrael out of Mitzrayim using the Mateh. And if you put all the different Rav Sabato and Rav Rimon and Rav Bazak, all the little pieces of them together, basically what they all come together saying is, what's at the core of this story is a different kind of battle, and the battle is not using the Mateh anymore, and it's actually using the Yadayim Shel Moshe to battle between kind of Moshe Amalek, which is why those three words appear seven times.
What does that mean?
What does it mean? Well, then actually you look at the...
It's not magical.
So that's... So, what is, right, what is that? It's fair, right? So what does that mean? It's actually interesting when you look at where the word Yad appears. Like, where do the other words appear? Even though those appear in a different rhythm. How does Moshe and Amalek appear? So it's like two and two, three, I'm sorry, how'd it go? Three and three, two and two, and two and two, right? And it's not, I'm not meaning that, it's actually neat. It's nine psukim divided into three stages, and there's three and three, two and two, and two and two. But Yad actually doesn't break down that way. How does Yad break down? I know, I forgot, I'm sorry. I didn't do it. Yeah.
151.
I mean, this is the classwork. This is like kind of the 151, actually. Breaks down 151. Meaning there are five yadayim in the middle. Five times. And then there's one at the beginning. Actually, what's the one that's at the beginning? Matei ha'elokim bi'adi. It's actually interesting in terms of what you were saying before. What's the yad in the first one? No. I mean, yeah, but no. No, matei ha'elokim. Meaning, when they start off the story, it's like the matei ha'elokim. It's meaning, it's about the matei part, which actually is an interesting contrast to the last one. What's the last one? Ki yad al kes ka milchama al Hashem ba'amalek. Rabbi Zak likes to point is that the last one is actually focused on a Kodesh Baruch Hu. It's just, this is like kind of the eternal God kind of thing. So basically what they're trying to argue, if you put all of these things together, is this is supposed to be moving away from, you have to kind of put yourself into the psychology of Mitzrayim. Basically, the psychology of Mitzrayim is miraculous events happen. But obviously Jews are not supposed to live like that. Jews are supposed to kind of move over from just relying on miracles to actually having some kind of combination of fighting wars and davening to Hashem. Some kind of combination. You have faith and you daven, but it's not miraculous. It's actually more like this. And that's kind of the shift over that's happening in the story. So that what's embedded in this is a shift from the Mateh Elokim to Elokim through the hands of Moshe. That's actually what the story is really saying. Meaning, the first yad is Matei Elokim Biadi, five times the hands of Moshe, last one is the Yad Hashem. Because what the story is actually describing in its own way is a shifting from the miracles of the Mata to the intermediariness of Moshe to recognizing actually that it was supposed to turn directly to Hashem on our own. That's kind of the idea. So it's shifting away from miracles and shifting towards more of what we kind of understand. We're supposed to do our own, and then we turn to Hashem for Ezra, and that's kind of what the story is trying to tell over. If you turn over to the other side...
So is that why the template wasn't followed?
So the template was... Yeah, meaning if you put that, it's like Moshe resorted to his initial template. Hashem didn't tell him to do that. And... I mean, there are a lot of gaps, to the narrative that I can't fill in. Meaning, what did Moshe think initially, and had that shift into the other thing? I don't really know. But I'll also note that, meaning it's also worth noting, Rav Rimon likes or notes the fact that the middle of the seven, he just takes that even a step further, I should have said a little earlier, is that Bidei Moshe Kvedim is the middle one. So it's almost like, it's like, you go from Yidei Moshe Kvedim is the middle of the seven, that's when Moshe's hands are tired, he can't really keep it up. It's like there's this ma'avar from the mateh to the hands getting tired to Hashkadosh Baruch Hu. That's kind of the travel, what's taking place. So that's a move for the Jewish people to move away from miraculous God to emunah in God, which I actually think, I mean, it's always going to stick with me. It always struck me as odd. I understand what that phrase was, that that they went to battle by he adat emunah bo ashamash. His hands were emunah bo ashamash. What is that? It's kind of an odd phrase. And somehow in this arrangement, it becomes much more like striking. Like the Adayim are actually not about miraculous forces. The Adayim are actually about, it's not like Moshe's hands go up. So usually it was a stick that made that happen, and now it's the hands that made that happen, which is a very plausible way to think about it. And it's saying like, well, that's like the way station to getting to where you're supposed to be. You're supposed to, you know, it's the mateh, and now it's the hands, and now you realize the hands are actually just about the faith, which then shifts it to just recognizing it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so like embedded within the words is this kind of move that the story is actually trying to describe. And she then goes, if you turn over, so that brings us actually to this, to the, to this midrash. I'm trying to understand that a little better, kind of trying to sort that out. So the Mishnah that is in the end of Rosh Hashanah is actually a Mechilta to Rabbi Ishmael. It's a Mechilta de Rashbi. It appears in two places. And in its completeness, it actually is a little bit longer. It's on the, we'll read the left side and the other side first, and then we'll read our Mishnayos. So the Mechilta reads as follows. V'haya kasher yarim Moshe yado begavar. V'chi yadav shel Moshe migabrot Yisrael o yadav shovrot Amalek. Mechilta says it's actually Moshe's hands that cause the Yisrael to be the victorious or Amalek to be destroyed. Ela kolzman shehaya Moshe magbia et yadav klapei mala. When Moshe would lift his hands up to Shamayim, hayu Yisrael mistaklim bo, Bnei Yisrael would look at his hands, u'ma'aminim b'mi shepiked et Moshe la'sotke. What would that cause them to do? To believe in the person who told Moshe to lift up his hands like that. They experienced emunah HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu oseh lahem nisim u'gvorot. And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu would actually do nisim on their behalf. Kayotze bo, the Midrash says, is another example of the same thing. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe aseh lecha saraf. But it's a similar kind of thing is when Hashem tells Moshe to make the nechash hanechoshet, so that when Bnei Yisrael were going to have that plague, they would look up at the nechash hanechoshet and be saved. So it says, v'chi nechash meimitu mechaye. Is the nechash actually cause life and death? How does that work? Which is again this kind of right, the nechash hanechoshet, like Moshe's yadayim, smack of some kind of magical, mystical, something or other, to which the Mechilta is saying, is that the way to understand it? Ela kolzman shehaya osekein, hayu Yisrael mistaklim bo u'ma'aminim b'mi shepakad et Moshe la'asotkein, v'akadosh baruch hu asa lehem refuot. So what's, according to this Mechilta, what are the hands? The hands are kind of a reminder that you should recognize the direction and kind of look up to Shemaim, and that's going to bring a Yeshua. What's the nachash? Nachash is directing your head up to Shemaim, and then that'll cause you to remember Kodesh Baruch Hu, and that's going to bring a Yeshua. The third example in the Mechilta is Kayotze bo, Vayad dam lachem la'ot. What's this a reference to in Shemot Perek Yud Bet? That the blood should be as an oat. This is Makat Bechorot, where you put the dam on the mezuzot and on the mashkof in order to protect you from Makat Bechorot. What does the blood do? When they put the blood on their doors, HaKadosh Baruch Hu chas aleihem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu would be merachem on them. Shenemar upasach Hashem al petach. If you just read this Mechilta, what's it kind of battling? What's the question? There are three cases. What's common to all of them? And what's the Mechilta actually trying to discuss? There's a case of Moshe's hands in the war of Amalek, there's Nechash and Nechoshet, and there's the blood at Yitziat Mitzrayim at Makat Bechorot. What's the concern of Chazal in this thing? In all these three cases? Do Judaism can actually be a very, it lends itself to thinking that exactly the kind of Chartumei Mitzrayim stuff is what Judaism is about. These are those kinds of things. It's like magic and trickery and stuff like that. You raise your hands and stuff happens. You put blood on the wall and that's like a sign something happens. You build a Nechash and a Choshet and the copper serpent protects you and that's what happens. So the basic question that all three of these examples raise for Chazal is, what do you mean, what is that how this stuff works? And you might answer, well, yes, that's actually how all of Yitziat Mitzrayim was happening, with all of that stuff. So they're raising all of these in order to say, that's not what's happening here. That might have happened then in order to make the point, but what Jews actually believe is not that these things are supposed to happen through magical forces, they're actually supposed to happen through... it's actually about our own personal growth and development and recognizing Kodesh Baruch Hu and God in our lives, and when we become those kinds of people, then things go well and they go right for us. So it's shifting it away from the magical forces and shifting it more inwards towards us. It shifts away from the hands and towards what's going on in our hearts. It shifts away from the blood and goes towards us doing a kind of connecting to Hashem, and that makes things work. It shifts away from the nachash being some kind of force to being, it directs our attention towards Shemayim, and that's actually what it says. So that Chazal are actually doing the same kind of thing that these Parshanim are saying that the Parsha is actually doing, which is kind of rationalizing, making us kind of understand that there's a movement for Am Yisrael that's happening over the course of Yitziat Mitzrayim, and that this Parshat HaMalek is actually a pretty big moment embedded here in terms of the way that happens. So I think that's the kind of the point of the story. That's the Melchemet Amalek part. Which then I just want to kind of bring back to the Mishnah and Rosh Hashanah. Because then, it's kind of interesting that when Rav Yehuda Anasi, when he established the Mishnah, so that was like a work, an edited kind of work. They decided, you know, decided what to put in and what to put where. So now that we've learned this a little bit, and can kind of have a vibe of... we have a vibe of what Masechet Rosh Hashanah is about, and then we know what this Midrash, Michilta Derash Rabbi Shmuel is actually about. So there's the story of Amalek, and then there's the story of the Nachash, and actually the story also of the Dam. So what does that have to do with Masechet Rosh Hashanah? On the face of it, nothing. It's not the same topic. It doesn't have anything to do with it. And actually, it's interesting, just through the eyeball, that you see that the Mishnayos and Rosh Hashanah decided to put in two out of the three, but left out actually the third. And actually, the two that they did put in, they put in with kind of a little bit of a change, a little bit of a shift. And that like lends a window into what's happening specifically in the Mishnah. So let's read those two Mishnayos and see if it kind of can make a little bit of sense out of it. It says, V'haya kasher yarim Moshe yado v'gabar Yisrael. V'chiyadav shel Moshe osot milchama o shavrot milchama ela lomar lecha kol zman sheayu Yisrael mistaklim klapei mala, as long as Bnei Yisrael would look up to Shemayim u'mishabdim et libam la'avim sheba Shemayim, and they would be mishabed themselves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, hayu mitgabrim, they would win, v'im lav hayu noflim. Natural kind of.
For the Jews to fully understand, but wouldn't you think that you see magic, Red Sea split, they would have more appreciation for Hashem than for it to come naturally? But the end goal.
The answer. The question is right, but what's the answer to that question? Meaning, yeah, that's
no, from the story that it didn't happen. No.
Well, I think. I mean, it's striking that the example, all the examples that you're going to bring are examples. Those are examples for basically up until this point. And the idea of the story is that this is supposed to be kind of a transition, moving away from that point. One, you know, the conflation between religion and magic is a complicated business, and there are religions that embrace that kind of thing. And part of this understanding of the story is to say that the way the story is being told is to move. Belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu and connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not about relying on the tricks that HaKadosh Baruch Hu can play for you by you kind of manipulating the forces or having a tremendous leader who is able to manipulate those forces. Actually, we do have that in our history. from the beginning of Parshat Shemot until right here. There's like a ton of that. Right? There are all these plagues and all these Mateh things, and then there's Kriyat Yam Suf, and then there's this. And this shifts it over. That's what the story is about. And then the Masechet Rosh Hashanah is actually shifting it even over a little bit more. And the reason why actually it's in, I don't know if you have the patience to pay attention to it, but do you sense a difference in the way the Mishnah and Rosh Hashanah quotes this Midrash? I mean, the Midrash comes first, Michil Rabbi Shmuel, and then it gets incorporated into the Mishnah. There's no question about that. Which means that somebody, Yudah Nasi, read this and put it into the Mishnah, changed it a little bit, put it in the Mishnah, changed it a little bit, and put it into the Mishnah. And it's actually interesting, I think it's interesting to think about that, because in that, it's one thing to learn the Mishnah, and then it's another thing to kind of imagine, okay, what was he thinking? He read that and said, I'm going to take that and put it here, and kind of shift it around a little bit. What he shifted around a little bit is the... You want to try that?
The presence of the Yadayim Shel
Moshe. The Yadayim are not part of the response.
Correct. In the Mishnah.
Yeah, in the Mishnah. That's one. They're two different. That's one. Meaning in the Midrash, they're still explaining the Parsha and Chumash. And the Parsha and Chumash, the Yadayim are prominent. And the answer in the Midrash, the Yadayim are part of the answer. And the second thing is, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu Oseh Lahem Nisim Gvuros. Like, the Midrash is trying to explain these miracles and saying, like, it's not about magical forces and God does you miracles. It's about turning to God and God does you miracles. And it's not magical. It's like emunah that's the way that it's going to play. And that's the Midrash. When you go to Masechet Rosh Hashanah, the hands are not there anymore, and actually the Yeshua is not there anymore, which is actually interesting why the third example is not brought, I think, because that's also like, that's all about Yeshua. That's actually what the whole thing is about. And here, this is I think there's like a cryptic one-line comment by the Rambam in his Perashat Mishnayos, I think says the whole thing, and is to me a reason why the Rambam must have loved, I think, this Mishnah. Ram says like this. He says, "Vayak Hashera Yarim Moshe Yadav Gavar Yisrael, Diber Bekan Kifi Masha Anachnu Tzrichim Bo." What it says here in this Mishnah is what we need from this Mishnah. B'Masha Anachnu B'Darko, in a way in which we follow the thinking of this Mishnah. U'Kivi Kavanas HaMasechta, in accordance with the idea of this whole Masechet. Which sounds like a gibberishy kind of sentence. But I think what the Rambam is actually trying to say is...
Shofar is supposed to be, wake us up.
As opposed to what you might think a shofar is. And what the Rambam is saying is, this is my whole philosophy. You know what I say, what I keep on saying? This Mishnah is that whole thing that I keep on trying to tell you. It's in this Mishnah. What does Rambam keep on trying to tell you? Like, religion is not about moving God's force. It's about, like, wisdom and connection and understanding. And if you have a shofar, how can you think about them? What does the shofar do? So it's very easy to imagine what the shofar does is it's ma'arbev the satan and causes, like, positive things to happen in Shammai and stuff like that. It's a very different thing to say it wakes us up, la'binu shabashamayim, which is exactly the same kind of move with the Yadayim and with the Saraf and stuff like that. The Yadayim, you feel like it's the Yadayim that are causing that to happen. The Midrash says, it's not the Yadayim that's causing that to happen. It's the Yadayim that's causing you to realize that you should turn your head to heaven, your mind heavenwards, that Hashem can take care of you. It's not the Nachash that's causing it. It's the Nachash that's causing you to think a certain kind of way that causes HaKadosh Baruch Hu to favor you. He says, the shofar is not what's causing that to happen. The shofar is supposed to impact on you in order for you to become a certain kind of person now, so that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to be responsive to you and you can establish a connection. So in the context of that, the Rambam reads this Mishnah and says, what does Amalek and everything have to do with Masechet Rosh Hashanah? Why is it here? He says exactly what I'm trying to tell you. That's why it's here. It's here because it's telling you that the idea of Rosh Hashanah is to impact on me. And when I become a better person, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu can be responsive to me. It's not in order to set some kind of magical forces in the air, which are theurgic, you know, you do the thing, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is kind of responsive. Which then basically says that kind of the arc of the whole thing is that in the narrative of the Torah, Milchemet Amalek is this kind of moment which moves away from the Mateh into a more emuna in battle kind of story. That's what that Ma'avar is. And that what's happening in the Mishnayos of Rosh Hashanah is it's almost kind of taking it a step further. That's true over there. That's how you should understand the things that we're doing over here also. That's what Shofar Shel Rosh Hashanah is all about. That's it. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Great day.